Welcome to The Property Wizard, brought to you by Creative Insight, helping you connect, and Gentry Learning, real estate professionals and educators. If you are brand new to the real estate investment world or have limited experience, you've come to the right place. Fred Crouch has over 35 years of real estate investing experience. He's seen it all, and he's ready to share it with you. This podcast takes an inside look at investing in real estate, what to look for, and most of all, how to move forward. Please welcome the property wizard, Fred Crouch.
Welcome back, listeners. We've got a really exciting show for you today. But first, a big thank you to the team at Carl Speaks, headed up by no other than Mr. Podcast himself, Carl Richards. We would especially like to acknowledge and thank our producer, Dom Carrillo, and supporting this awesome duo are Nathan Simon, who created the original sound score, and Caroline Nicolai, who every episode supplies us with new cover artwork. Thank you, everyone. Great work, team. So, how about a recap from our previous podcast when we discussed the dance that municipalities need to do when dealing with legislative issues surrounding intensification and affordable housing and balancing that with the concerns of their constituents? We had a really amazing guest, three-term mayor of Hamilton, Fred Eisenberger. What did you think of that podcast, Bernie?
You know, Fred, it's the long-range plans, the right things to do, and mixing that with the in the heat of the moment politics. You know, someone's going, hey, you got to do this and do that. And I found it fascinating that sometimes you strategically position things. I think their harbor, that situating that, and then the urban sprawl kind of wrapping itself around there, causing a bit of how they work their way around it without where everybody has a win-win scenario. And in the long game, I think for the housing piece, you know, if you work collaboratively, you solve the problem and you solve it sooner than having a back and forth match.
Yeah, it was great having had Daryl McCorston on in the previous podcast where we talked about 3P initiatives and how Fred was kind of, you know, he actually brought that up. That one of the ways to solve the housing issues that not just Hamilton, but every major municipality, again, not just across Canada, but also in the US are facing, how 3P initiatives could be a solution to that. So yeah, that was a really, really great show. We have a mailbag, jingle, blah, blah, blah. Anything in the mailbag today, Bernie?
You've got mail. We have a question from Jeffrey from Naples. And his question is, he's hoping that you can help settle a disagreement that he's having with his real estate partner. They bought a property together almost 10 years ago. And the circumstances in his life have changed so that he needs to sell his share interest in the property that they both own together so that they can purchase a home with his new wife. What is the fairest way to deal with this situation?
Thank you for your email, Jeffrey. Without having spoken to you further, I am imagining that you do not want to sell the property. That, of course, would be the easiest and simplest way to deal with this circumstance. Having owned the property for the past 10 years, you must have seen an appreciable increase in the property's value. I'm presupposing the property is not 100% paid for. However, your mortgage balance has probably decreased substantially. The second option I would propose is that you refinance the property, either at or on the renewal date to avoid paying any discharge penalties, or in the case where the property is paid for by putting on a first mortgage. Another option that I might propose is to have your partner take back a promissory note for the amount of the sale secured by your interest in the property. This is a less formal way to finance a property, but it doesn't sound like that may be an option in this case, considering your partner's desire to purchase a home with his new spouse. If you did go that route, then of course your partner would be able to sell his security to another third party at a discounted rate. Before you do anything, though, it'll be necessary to establish a fair market value for the property. The best way to do this is by hiring an appraisal expert to establish the value. In most situations that I've been involved in, it is both the seller and the buyer, in this case, you and your partner, who obtain appraisals with the average value of the respective appraisal serving as the selling price of the property. A note to our listeners, most of these type issues can be remedied with a little bit of foresight and with the strength of a good co-tenancy or partnership agreement. So I hope I've answered your question. Thank you for your email.
Fred, that was it. And of course, if there are no problems,
there are no opportunities.
So if you have any questions for Fred, you can reach him at info@gentryres.com. That's info@gentryres.com.
From the current events desk of the Property Wizard, it's news of the week.
Welcome, listeners. Pickleball, anyone? That's the title of the article that I would like to discuss with you today. It's entitled Mixed-Use Development Includes Courts to Attract Shoppers and Office Workers, and it was written by David Israelson of the Globe and Mail, and it was published on February 13th, 2024. So let me paraphrase what David has written. A Toronto-based company believes it has found a way to help commercial properties get out of the pickle, pun intended, they're in trying to attract people back to offices and malls. As we all know, listeners, retail plazas and large shopping centers have really suffered the brunt of a lot of downsizing of late. And there is a movement afoot that we're describing that we're going to talk about right now. Fairgrounds Public Racquet Club is installing pickleball courts across the country, including 9 new courts in Toronto's Cloverdale Mall, where Target once stood. The entire 32-acre Cloverdale site at the intersection of Highway 427 and Dundas Street, which is very busy. To our listeners down in the States, who I'm sure are all familiar with Toronto, this is just a very, very busy shopping district. The entire 32-acre Cloverdale site at the intersection of Highway 427 and Dundas Street West is being redeveloped by Quad Real Property Group as a mixed community with new streets and retail, community amenities, parkland, and pickleball. Pickleball is a way to bring people to public spaces, Fairgrounds co-founder Drummond Monroe says. In addition to Cloverdale and Vaughan, Fairgrounds is opening courts in downtown Toronto, Ottawa, and Calgary, with more to come, Mr. Monroe says. The article goes on to say, pickleball is one of the fastest growing sports in North America, according to Pickleball Canada, who isn't going to tell you anything different. What is pickleball? The game is similar to tennis, but played on a smaller 20 by 44 foot court and is more forgiving on players' muscles and bones. It uses rackets shaped vaguely like an old fashioned carpet beater. I kind of would suggest it's more like a racquetball court. You guys remember racquetball? I think people still play it, right? Racquetball and squash, right? It uses racket shape vaguely like old-fashioned carpet beater and a plastic wiffle ball that makes a loud pop when players hit it. It's not surprising that developers and building owners are interested in offering space to pickleball courts, says Bobby McDonald, who's the brokerage managing director for Southwestern Ontario at Kohler's Canada. While the market is tightening for some types of retail real estate, such as open-air malls, the nationwide retail vacancy rate in Canada has been slowly growing over the past 3 years to 7.5%, which is actually quite high. The article goes on to say, we're seeing it in a few retail buildings where there's space, former big box stores or furniture stores, for example, but it's happening more in the United States than here. We usually follow American sporting trends a bit later, which is true. We always seem to be maybe a couple of years behind up here in Canada. It wouldn't surprise me if more buildings that have the right sort of space available start offering pickleball as an amenity for tenants, says Benjamin Schweinwald, president and chief executive officer of BOMA Canada. One of the biggest trends in recent years has been amenitization, a response to tenant demand for amenities in the buildings where they work, live, and play. These could be gyms, co-working spaces, coffee bars, conference facilities, food and dry cleaning delivery services. All these things are designed to improve the tenant experience. Why not pickleball? And that's exactly the story. Why not pickleball? I mean, a lot of people don't like the sound it makes, and there's been a lot of complaints and court cases revolving around the sound and the noise that, you know, neighboring people have to listen to when they're located right next to a pickleball court. but that kind of disappears when you turn around and put it inside. What do you think of that, Bernie?
Yeah, it's a pretty good idea. It's making use of space. It's the get healthy moment. And I also know that the age bracket of people that will play pickleball tend to be over the age of 30 and up. And, that seems to be a big thing. And apparently there's a booming supply of them.
For sure. Absolutely. Wonderful. That's all I have for you today, listeners.
Check out the new course offerings at gentrylearning.com. There you'll find answers to all your real estate investment questions. Divided into easy-to-learn interactive segments, it's the affordable way to gain invaluable insight and knowledge into the world of real estate investing. Start the right way. Visit gentrylearning.com.
Hello, listeners. Our guest today is a longtime friend of mine, Terrell LeClaire, who is a licensed electrician by trade and owner of one of the largest privately owned and operated security installation and monitoring companies in the Eastern Ontario area. More importantly, he is father to two accomplished young people. Alliance Security is a bona fide multi-generational family business, first started by his father, Leo, and which now includes his son, Dylan. It also has an A-plus rating at the Better Business Bureau. Terrell is also the founder of Bikers Against Child Abuse and has been the Ottawa area president for the past 10 years. He has also traveled extensively around Canada and the U.S. on a motorcycle, making the circling journey three times and accompanied by a variety of colorful characters. If you ever have time to speak to Terrell, he will just keep you rolling with the stories that he can share. Welcome to the show, Terrell. Oh, and one more thing. He prefers bourbon to scotch. Hi, Terrell.
Hey, Fred. How you doing?
Really well. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. So let's get right to it. How long have you been involved in the security business, Terrell?
It's really, really hard to believe and say, but it's 32 years this summer. I can't believe I'm getting that old.
Yeah, unbelievable. I just can't fathom that. I remember having the discussion with your dad when he first started. And wow, 32 years. That's scary. That's what that is.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard to believe the time's gone by that fast. To think that we're celebrating 32 years in business is just ridiculous.
Yeah, for sure.
Is there a particular area that you like to focus in, Terrell? Is it industrial, residential?
We do generally high-end residential and smaller commercial. Try to stay away from the really, really big jobs because there just doesn't seem to be any money at it. And far too many guys are unqualified and unsure of what they're doing. So they're quoting jobs so low that there's just no profit left in them. So for a smaller family-based business, it makes more sense to go after the high-end residential market and the smaller commercial applications.
Yeah, that only makes sense. It seems like just about every industry is like that. Just because the job is larger or bigger doesn't necessarily mean that it's more profitable. I'm constantly telling people that. If you don't need to hire additional bodies, if you don't need to expand, if there really isn't an absolute strong business case for it, you know, my overwhelming feeling is stick with what makes you money, period.
Big mistakes are harder to get past too, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So what kind of advancements have been made in the alarm industry lately?
Well, you know, it's funny, for years and years, the biggest thing was you punched in the 4-digit code on a security system that allowed you access. And then they came out with smart keys so you could hit stay or away to arm it quickly. And now it's the last 12 years or so, ever since a company called Alarm.com came out with their offering for smart device applications, the industry has been spun on its head. I can do anything now from a remote location. I can answer my door, unlock it, check and see who's at my house. If a door opens, I can have a camera come on and send me video of what just took place. Control thermostats, lights, locks, everything. It's just ridiculous what we can do now.
Can you also set alarms for like flooding situations too?
Everything imaginable.
Really?
Flooding, a sensor on a liquor cabinet that reports to a camera that sends it to you. So if your son comes to your house, which I have many videos of, my son coming in through my garage door, opened the fridge in the garage, grabbing two beers, giving me the finger and walking back out again because he knows that I'm watching, right? Anything can now be done. So temperatures inside refrigerators, coolers, sump pump sensors, water sensors, overflow of water. It's ridiculous what we can do.
So it's good. I'm glad you clarified that, because for a moment there, I thought you were talking about my son. So that's good to know.
Biometrics seems to be a big thing. You see it on your smartphone. You know, it's either by thumbprint or a visual, or it can be a voice. Is that becoming a standard? And is that really super tight and secure? Can it be spoofed? Because, you know, the four-digit pad, I remember those days. You type in four digits, someone watches it, right? And now the game has been upped. But is biometrics coming into play, and is it really a strong add-on to that, to the security of the place?
Well, if you think about it, if you're using your thumb to access your phone, which allows you to access the app on your phone, then you're already using biometrics. But to install scanners in buildings or residences, only high-end commercial applications seem to be going that way, because it's still very, very expensive, especially in Canada where everything freezes for so long. Once we hit minus 10, electronics just don't work well outside unless they're designed specifically for that application, which makes them a hell of a lot more expensive.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about the temperature concerns.
Yeah. Touchscreen locks that people are buying aren't working properly. A lot of the Ring and Google garbage that you can get on Amazon just doesn't work in our temperatures. It's great for the mass market down in the southern U.S., but it doesn't work very well up here.
Good point. I know I've had some experiences with Ring, you know, and you're absolutely right. As soon as the weather, you know, gets worse, temperature plummets, it doesn't work. It just doesn't.
I try to tell people all the time, if you can buy it at Best Buy, on Amazon, or a Google ad, stay away from it. It's just going to disappoint.
Yeah, that's some good advice. So let's move on to something maybe a little more specific. What's the best way to secure a multi-unit residential building? You know, just generally, because most property owners aren't going to want to spend a great deal of money leaving alarm systems, at least internal alarm systems, to the tenant to install if that's what it is they want. But what if you have a multi-unit building and you want to somehow secure it? How do you do that? I mean, how do you secure like common areas and like the entry points? Is it just typically we're talking about maybe a high-end, you know, lock system, lock and key system, or are there other things that we can do?
Well, access control, so key fobs to allow people to unlock doors. And the only problem with that is, I mean, I remember when I was a kid, we'd show up in an apartment building where there was a party and you couldn't gain access. You just waited for somebody to come out and you all walked in, right? And people allowed it to happen. That's still a pretty big issue. So you can stop somebody from coming in to a point, but if tenants are going to allow them access, you're no further ahead. And the only way to really combat that would be with new AI cameras that will face recognize people that are allowed to be there, and somebody who's not allowed to be there, you can send an alert to someone, but somebody has to manage that. So you can imagine if you're at the management of a property company and you're getting an alert on your phone at 11 o'clock at night because somebody who's not on your system is now walked through, you don't know whether they've been invited in or they haven't been invited in. So it's not an easy thing to tackle. A lot of it's awareness. People have to be aware of what's going on and not allow that individual to use what we call a buddy system to gain access.
Yeah, so it would kind of make sense that, you know, educating your tenants is the best defense against something like that.
Well, you know, a couple of people get their apartments broken into, they'll very quickly realize that, yeah, they shouldn't have allowed that person in, right? It makes sense. If you want to keep your stuff, you don't want to be accosted in the elevator or in a hallway or whatever. You just cannot allow people that are not allowed in the building to gain access.
So is there a way that a tenant can secure the inside of their apartment without going through walls and everything else? Like, are alarm systems sophisticated enough that you don't have to hardwire everything? So, you know, the transient nature of tenants, they may be there for a couple of years. They're not necessarily going to be interested in spending a great deal of money on a system that they can't take with you, but rather have to repair, you know, the walls and the damage or the, you know, whatever they've needed to do in order to install the system in the first place. So is there some sort of system that allows maybe a tenant to install the system within their apartment?
So wireless has come a really long way. There's no more wireless interference with from unit to unit. Everything is serial number programmed into a system. So you can have two systems side by side. They're not going to interfere with each other. The wireless of yesterday was very unreliable, we'll say. But like anything else, you get exactly what you pay for. If you want a good quality wireless security system that you can take with you, all of the features we talked about earlier, the app on your phone, the control, alerts, all this kind of stuff can easily be done with no mess to the unit at all, no damage done.
That is really, I wonder how many people actually know that, because that's brilliant. So, but when it comes to the exterior of the building, which really falls more on the landlord, what would you suggest as the as a minimum? Let's not talk about the entry point. Let's just deal with the exterior, like exterior cameras, you know, monitored, recorded. Is that what we would call the, you know, the baseline when it comes to monitoring what's going on around your building?
Absolutely. There's no other way to do it.
Yeah.
Good quality cameras that provide night light. The new AI cameras will literally pick off the freckles on someone's face. License plates from a distance. There's so much available now. It's just a matter of cost. If you want to keep people out of your building or you want to know what happened, that's the only way to do it. So access limitations, garage access, all this kind of stuff without a valid card or a fob, you can't get in. And then the cameras pick up what's going on at the same time. There's nowhere you can be almost anywhere anymore, public or private, without being on camera. So to think that landlords haven't caught on to that yet is kind of insane.
Yeah, that's a very, very important point. I know we had a situation here over the holidays, and if it hasn't become obvious to you listeners, Terrell actually supplies me with alarm services, not just at my residence, but other properties as well. And we had a situation where somebody attempted to break into one of our vehicles. And you had just installed one of those smart cameras, maybe about 4 to 6 weeks previous. And it caught the entire thing, right to the point where when the alarm went off on the vehicle, the kids ran down the street and there was another car waiting for them half a block away. And the camera was able to pick that up and we sent everything to the police. So it works. Speaking from personal experience, it works. Bernie.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Just in follow-up to that, two things, and I think it's great that the tech behind the wireless pieces has picked up. Do you have any issues? You hear this about baby cams, right? Especially the more sophisticated ones that someone can hack into it. Are these more secure than they have been in the past for access control and managing so someone basically can't spoof the system or blind it?
Generally, what is getting hacked into is your actual connection to the internet, not the camera itself. The cheaper the camera, the less there is encryption. Anything that comes with its own app, if you're not securing your network, your home network properly, and if you're answering all kinds of stupid phishing questions on Facebook and all, I mean, it's just people don't think of what they're giving out. The cameras of yesterday were quite unsophisticated. Everything's cost-driven. I can buy a camera for $45 on Amazon. I wouldn't install it anywhere because it's completely useless and it will likely get hacked. The alarm.com service is completely encrypted, cloud-based. There's a monthly fee for it, but that's where you're getting your security from. So the less you spend, the more likely it's going to happen, and the less prepared you are for it, the more likely it's going to happen.
And in your larger commercial or in your commercial spaces, especially when you're monitoring, has anybody raised the issue of privacy, or is that just, you know, you put a decal up saying, hi, the area is surveilled?
The laws on this kind of stuff are changing constantly and from area to area. So the general rule of thumb we've always gone with is you're not allowed to videotape someone else's space. So technically, the front of your store, as an example, or the front of your building is still your space. If you're leasing it or you own it, it's yours. In a residential environment, if you have a camera that's filming your laneway, you're totally allowed to do that. But if you turn that camera so it's also filming your neighbor's laneway, they can force you to move it. Right, you're going to create a fight. You have no idea the number of calls I get. People are so upset that their neighbor is picking up their movement in their laneway. It's ridiculous, the fights that go on. Rather than understand that it's for everyone's protection, it's just something that you need to be aware of. There's cameras everywhere now. You can't walk anywhere without being on a video. Everyone's got one in the palm of their hand. So how do you enforce a law like that but I'm sure our illustrious prime minister will find a way.
Actually, it's interesting. If I walk down my neighborhood, everybody probably has a Ring cam or, you know, one of the doorbell cameras, and it has a good range, and it'll probably pick me up walking the dog. So kind of brings me to the next point then, to set up a system the right way, you know, to find the right hardware, kind of what budgeting factors are that drive a solution to come together. What does it take to make it happen?
The biggest problem with the cost for security is it's not something you can see and show off to your friends. So when you go to buy a brand new car, it doesn't seem that budget matters. Everyone's driving around in a Beamer or a Porsche, or whatever, a Mercedes, because that's the flash. But when it comes to security, people are extremely budget conscious because they think it should be cheap. And that's what gets a lot of people in trouble. So I mean, budget-wise, depending on what you're doing, it's like insurance. It's peace of mind. It's what if you never have to use it? Is it worth spending money on something that you may never have to use? Well, that's really hard to judge. So it's the peace of mind and how well you want to sleep at night. What do you want to capture and how well do you want to capture it to determine what you're going to spend?
So if you're a commercial application, keeping that in mind, would you tie in the HVAC monitoring too at the same time? So, you know, temperature drop, obviously you can do the temperature drop, but, you know, would you incorporate other elements into that? Like some places will integrate temperature, what's happening outside, add more heat, subtract heat. Is it that sophisticated or is it straight just alarm access control?
No, we can do anything, literally anything. It depends on how much information you want, how much control you want over it, and how often you want to be notified that something's up.
True.
And residentially, it's easy because there's only one homeowner. But when you're dealing with a management company or managing several properties, it's a wonderful tool, but it can also drive you around the bend. If you have a tech on call, every time he gets a notification, he jumps in his truck and goes, that costs you a fortune, right? So you need somebody with a little common sense that's not going to bugger the whole thing up and can read into what's being sent to them rather than rolling the truck every time their phone goes up. Mm-hmm. But yeah, all this kind of stuff is available, but it's not cheap.
So what's the best way? Let's shift gears just a little bit here. When it comes to commercial premises, it's a slightly different animal, but I'm getting the impression that exterior cameras as an absolute minimum for the landlord. When it comes to the tenant should be responsible for their own interior alarm system. What if you're given an industrial building, for instance, what would you recommend to the landlord versus the tenant as far as bare minimums when it comes to, you know, the standard or type of alarm system that you can install there?
So as far as the landlord goes, cameras are a must so that he can track what's going on because he's still responsible for the building's structure and all the rest of it. The mechanical rooms, so some pump monitoring if it's needed. Elevator pits, right? A lot of elevator pits have some pumps in them. So it's important to keep the water level to a minimum or at least be notified if it's gone up. We get a lot of people who say, well, we've got two pumps and a backup battery. So, but that doesn't justify the security system. Well, if your pipe is clogged and the pumps are running and the power's out, it still may function, but maybe the water's not getting out. So for a couple $100, put a sensor on it. It doesn't make sense not to. Access into mechanical rooms, access into electrical rooms for shared properties is huge. A lot of these places, there's a brick in the door that lets people just open it and they can walk in and check the phone line. And it's ridiculous what goes on. So these big mechanical rooms and communications rooms that anybody can walk into, and all of the tenants have their internet that runs through there. It's got to come in the building somewhere, and that's generally where it comes in, and it's all completely exposed. So all that kind of stuff needs to be tightened up because you've put everybody at risk with that. And the individual tenants themselves, they've got to put their own systems in, no question.
Absolutely. Only makes sense. Bernie?
Are you finding that there's any mandated requirements, either through an insurance policy coverage or, and I'm talking about for the commercial operations, obviously, where your landlord is, here's a bare minimum of what you got to do or should be doing, and it'll appease the insurance? Or is there legislation that drives some of this for security components, even life safety?
It really depends. I've got a client that's got a big commercial warehouse. He has a forklift operator that operates in that warehouse by himself. So I think there's a local statute of some kind that says he needs to have a panic button and there should be a camera installed just because he's there on his own. right? It just makes sense. From the insurance point of view, we get a lot of insurance companies, especially in the high-end residential area right now. Any house over $750,000, $800,000, which lately is your average decent townhouse, they want security for burglary, fire, water, the big three. So water, if a washer dryer backs up and you're in the third floor of a condo, your insurance is responsible for everybody's damage that that caused. So it's important to know when that is happening. So insurance companies are getting better and better at it. And the good insurance companies will give you a discount for doing it because they know you're trying to help. It's not going to justify the cost of everything, but it's an incentive to try. As far as landlord to tenant, I don't know, other than fire alarm monitoring, I don't think there's anything that they have to do. But insurance companies are taking such a beating that it's just a matter of time before it's going to get brought in.
Before it's actually mandated.
Yeah.
You have to do it.
Yeah.
You know, where I'm actually quite surprised that builders haven't offered that from the get-go. If you're having a custom home built or any home built, I'm amazed that builders haven't, you know, actually, you know, offered that as a as an upgrade, you know, because all the walls are open and I know there's wireless systems and everything, but wouldn't it make a lot more sense and it'd be less expensive if you want to put particularly a higher end system in to have the walls open and things easily and readily accessible? But I haven't heard of a builder actually offering that a la carte. So anyways, just a point for our listeners out there. So just again, so let's say you've got, and I know we can only talk in ranges here, but if you have, speaking of the setup that we described when talking about a multi-unit residential building versus, for instance, a commercial building or an office retail building, I know there's two components to it. What we're really concerned about during this conversation is what it's going to cost the landlord. So the landlord is going to have monitoring fees. Once the system is installed, is that pretty much where it stands? They're going to have a range. They're going to have a monthly monitoring fee that they're going to need to pay for once the system's installed?
Yeah, absolutely. So everything now, we used to use phone lines. So it was quite expensive. The landlord needed, if you wanted the system set up, you needed to install a commercial phone line, which back in the day was $90 to $150 a month. Phone lines are no longer necessary. Everything's done now through GSM cellular technology. So for $35 a month, you can monitor a fire panel. You can monitor some pump switches. There's all kinds of stuff you can do.
Expensive.
And that ranges from $35 and up, depending on how carried away you get with it.
So that's actually really affordable, far more affordable than it was 15, 20 years ago, for sure. I can remember having to install, you're absolutely right, a commercial line into a building, and it wasn't inexpensive. I mean, for a singular alarm, just so we could have an alarm system. So that's really important for our listeners to know. So if you have looked at installing an alarm system in the past, if you own a commercial or investment style property, but were dissuaded or decided against it because of the cost, this is some really, really important information for you to know. It's not going to cost you what it used to cost you. Bernie.
You know, having a bit of a past experience managing a larger building, the life safety system, they had it on too. They had the GSM circuit, but they also had internet fed through. So it had a failover point. So if, you know, one dropped or, you know, the cell towers are down for whatever reason, it just, there's always a way to, you know, always a way to communicate to the outside world. And speaking of like with the life safety pieces, you know, the insurance company and I imagine most mortgage lending institutions want to see certain protection of assets. Do you find that there is, from the insurance side, there is a discount then from in commercial operations? Other than, hi, I mandate this, but do you find that if you add that extra value to the security coverage, to the water sensors, the temperature sensors, you're integrated to your building management system, you know, the overall control of the system, do you find that there's other credits that come back to the landlord? Like you said, not offsetting the cost, but it's a bonus. And can you actually promote that?
There would be absolutely no reason why not. Any insurance company that's not giving a discount to someone who spent the money and is trying to prevent or at least detect before damage causes far more than it should. Insurance companies should absolutely be giving discounts for it. Most on a residential scale, they all do. As long as you're insured properly, A lot of people don't have proper insurance because they don't read the fine print. They call the cheapest company in the phone book, and that's what they run with. And they find out after something happens how poorly insured they were, and then the fight starts. So it's really important to make sure you're dealing with a company that's interested in protecting all of your assets. Nobody has to approve it anymore. When I was a kid, the insurance company came, sat down with my parents, and the salesman went through everything that they wanted and took an inventory of what was being done. And now there's riders on everything. If you even have more than $500 cash, you're not covered in some cases. Our jewelry has a $1,000 rider. There's lots of things to get that cost of insurance low as possible. And people aren't realizing what they're giving up to get there. So if you're not insured properly, you're not getting a discount. It's that simple.
Good point. Well said, too, for sure. So one thing that we haven't spoken about is just, let's say you have a parking lot or like a gated community. So there's a lot of, well, there's a lot of car traffic. Is there a way that you can properly secure that?
To an extent. Again, AI cameras have come a long way. They can pick off a license plate and open a door. That kind of thing, that can all happen automatically. It's a question of how far you take it and what are the surroundings like. Is it one gate? Is there several entrances? Is it easy just to walk around the gate and not come by a vehicle? There's a whole bunch of factors involved. The technology is there to do whatever you need done. Question is, does it fit in the budget? Yeah, it always comes down to cost.
Yeah. You see that type of situation, a gated community, more with our southern friends. In Florida, Arizona, Texas, California, a lot of gated communities. But you have to question about how secure they actually are. But what I'm hearing you tell us, Terrell, is that it all depends on, you can secure the living daylights out of it, but if the property owners or the management companies don't educate those using the system, that there's an easy workaround. So education, again, is of paramount importance. And again, don't chintz on the available security measures. That really, to me, seems like the overwhelming answer to most of these issues or problems. I mean, people taking shortcuts, you know, because they think they're saving money, when in the long run, it's going to do nothing but cost them money. And when you actually need the security system to work, it doesn't.
So, all about peace of mind. If you don't have the peace of mind after something happens, then you're no further ahead. You should have put the proper system in the first time.
Yeah, very true. It should sell itself. It should.
It's just common sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Bernie.
I actually want to follow up on that last question. Two things come to mind. Although the alarms or the protective systems actually are defending either against a system failure, like, you know, water seepage, et cetera, or an intrusion, or, you know, an adversarial piece. Do you find that before you start a job, you do a security audit, and then you come back like every 2 years? Because I've noticed, let's say with cars here in the city of Ottawa, you know, people have picked up on how to hack the signal from the fob, the car fob, and then start the car and make off with the car. So do you find you would recommend that people kind of review and do a security audit and come back to you and say, listen, are we good? Are we as tight as we can be?
That's a difficult thing to do because in business, you're always in that pursuit to find new clients. Security is a very personal thing for most people. And we get more people that will ask us to stop sending them stuff because once they've got it, they don't want to be bugged anymore. From a commercial point of view, maintenance contracts are big, but a lot of people don't want to pay for them. So we have no problem going back and cleaning cameras and making sure systems are functional. But these companies didn't want to pay for that service. So a lot of the times it's left up to them. And it's funny that it seems the security guys that run a lot of these departments and these companies switch from company to company very quickly. There doesn't seem to be much retention in that. So we end up dealing with a new guy every couple of years. Or they put it out to tender to get a cheaper price. It's always price driven. I'm not sure why they pick on security the way they do. They'll make the lobby look like $1 million with a $5 card reader. Just doesn't make sense.
That's so true.
So for the future state then, if both with advancements in security, because this kind of, you know, like you said, the AI cameras are a heck of a lot better than 5-10 years ago, right? Systems can do a lot more robust. Are you finding that as new tech comes into play, that people should revisit that space and look at it because it's miles ahead, or kilometers ahead in this case, where they were, right?
Yeah, absolutely. My only concern with the rate in which technology has changed is, are we going to keep it to the owner of the building, or is that information going to be given to somebody else? In our case, especially in Canada right now, it doesn't seem that there's any privacy of anything. Bank accounts getting frozen because you have an attitude or a difference of opinion. To think that the government can walk in and access AI camera footage from a business owner to determine when their employees were there, it's getting a little out of control. So that's kind of a scary part.
Actually, I'd be rather concerned, because if a government would be any government, then would be able to access it, because then they're able to hack the system. But as the evolution of the security system goes forward, though, do you find, say, like smart homes? That's a big thing. Like people, I want to be able to turn my light switch on and off with my phone or whatever the case might be. Do you find that the security system is intermeshed with that whole smart home tech?
The smart homes of yesterday were outrageously expensive. Right, because they were tying in audio, sound systems, video, security, all kinds of stuff, lines up and down, all this other infrastructure that was in the smart home. But it was thousands and thousands of dollars, and very few technicians that were able to troubleshoot issues with it. So we've gone back to basics, it seems, in the industry, where your basic wireless security system with the smart app can now do all of that. It's just a question of how intricate do you want it to be. The big problem before was one person was trained on how the system worked, and they were given this pad on how to figure it all out. And the moment that person wasn't home, say that if the husband was the one trained on the system, he would go out of town for a weekend and his poor wife couldn't turn the TV on because the app was so confusing, or the music would come on and she couldn't get it to shut off, and it just drove everybody crazy. It was too sophisticated at the time and way too expensive. Where now it is so simple. It's just all icon driven, push button with your finger. It's very, very easy to do. It's not as intricate in what it can do, but it's getting there.
It's all about user interface too, right? Just 100%. How that entire technology has really kind of grown. And that's with just about anything that you use, really. That's really
remember good. Not that long ago, Fred, you'd have four or five converters on your table, one for the CD player, one for the VCR, all this other nonsense. And now it's all an app on your TV.
Yeah, true.
Right? Nobody uses any of that stuff anymore. What the hell's a TV? Yeah. Right?
Look, just as kind of summing things up, and I know the answer to this already, but in your opinion, Terrell, can a property owner, whether you own residential or commercial, like really afford to operate with a proper security in place?
If you read any of the news, any of the real news, no, I don't understand how anybody could. My wife won't go to bed at night unless she arms the security system. And it's not just for security. With water detection, fire, smoke, heat control, all this kind of stuff, it's become more of a life safety management system than it is just for security. I have people a lot will say, why don't you have a security system? I don't have anything of value. So, well, I don't know. Your kids are pretty valuable. Your wife's pretty valuable. I don't care if you have a Harley in the driveway or a big screen TV. That's irrelevant nowadays. Everyone's after the fob for the car, if possible. They want your passport, your driver's license, SIN number, any of that kind of stuff. That's why all these phone scams work. Because if they can get a little bit of your information, that's where the value is. Nobody's breaking into your house to steal your big screen TV. You can't get it down the street, right? It's all about the easy little stuff, but information is huge nowadays.
Wow. That really kind of opens your eyes to the very real threats and the things that, you need to guard against. And
yeah, it's the actual information that they're after. You leave a laptop in a car, you leave your driver's license lying around, or you lose your wallet, you leave your wallet in your car, your ownership of your vehicle in your car, never leave any of that stuff in there. Never, never. Old school garage door openers, don't leave that in the car, for the love of God.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Bernie, do you have anything else you'd like to ask our guests before we move on to our rapid fire questions?
Yeah, it's the biological alarm system. Would you recommend people get a dog or a other type of four-legged creature that could repel or alert you to things? Would that be the original alarm system then?
Yeah, as long as you don't mind feeding and picking up poop, I guess it's okay. The average dog isn't going to scare anybody. The average dog is going to lick and greet whoever comes through the door. I've got one dog who's like the drunk uncle. He just lays around on the couch, doesn't care. The other dog goes crazy as soon as somebody comes in. So yeah, it'll alert you. It's not going to help you any because that poor little dog's not going to do anything. We had years ago in Ottawa, there was a case where the guy showed up with a couple hamburgers, fed the two guard dogs and walked right past them. Yeah. So it's all about what expectation you have, right? Life safety in today's world is huge. The average break-in in residential setting right now is between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. because they know it's taking two salaries to run a house. A lot of people are working from home. So if somebody comes to the door, bangs on the door, and you don't answer it, when I was a kid, you were taught, you're home by yourself, you don't answer the door, you don't answer the phone, you don't answer anything. And now it's the opposite. You have to make sure they know someone's home, so hopefully they'll leave. If not, the second sound you hear is a window getting smashed or a door getting kicked in. They act like they belong, and they get away with it. It's simple to do. Most houses, the front door is the weakest part of the house, and that's exactly where they walk up to. So that's the average four-legged creature, unless you've got a hyena that's going to rip them apart, I wouldn't recommend it.
All good points. Terrell, thank you so much. This has been so informative. Listeners, I'm sure you'll draw something out of this. You've really brought the point home. But before we let you go, it's time for our rapid fire round. So, Terrell,
what's your morning routine like?
Generally, up out of bed, 5 a.m., jam a couple coffees in, start responding to emails, checking to see what happened the night before, schedule work for the guys, get them up and ready out the door, get equipment on pickup at the suppliers. All that kind of stuff's got to happen. And then, of course, the dogs have got to go out for a pee.
So what's your favorite book?
Anything Jordan Peterson.
Favorite hobby or pastime that doesn't involve bourbon?
Well, I think I can ride my bike without bourbon. So riding my motorcycle, archery, and believe it or not, roller skating.
Wow, roller skating, really?
Now, I can roller skate better than I can walk.
There you go.
Is there a disco ball in your future or what?
No, only old school rock and roll.
You could probably roller skate better with bourbon, though. Now, are those.
Not in excess, though.
Good for you. So what do you do to relax?
That's a good question, other than riding the bike and roller skating. I've got an RV. I load up on weekends. Weekends generally start on Thursday afternoon. Load the RV up with the dogs and my wife, and we head out to hit some local wineries and restaurants. A program called Harvest Host all over North America. It's anybody who camps or does anything like that is really worth looking into. It's a lot of fun.
That sounds interesting. I haven't heard of that. Bernie, have you? Harvest Host?
No.
That's interesting. I have to look into that.
So is there a favorite place in the world for you to visit other than the local establishments that generate the brew and the vino?
My favorite place in North America has got to be the Big Sur coast of California.
Yeah.
I've been there many, many times. There's a little spot there called Whale Watchers Cafe right in the middle of the Big Sur coast. No phones work, no cable, no TV. Internet's terrible. It's awesome.
Sounds like no alarm system, too.
I don't think they really need one because everybody's there is on the same wavelength.
Yeah, and it's open 24/7, I would imagine, too. Is that just off the Pacific Coast Highway?
It's right on the Pacific Coast Highway. It's the only gas after you're past Ragged Point. It's the only gas you can get. Outrageously expensive because of that. But it's about an hour and a half south of Monterey and an hour and a half north of Malibu.
You're going to have to give me the Terrell's notes on that. I'm headed that way in the fall. So Awesome. Let's finish up here. If you could have coffee or tea with one person, living or dead, who would it be?
Oh, hands down, no question, my dad. Never got a chance to say goodbye properly.
I thought you would say that.
Yeah, without question.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Terrell.
It's time for the Property Wizard's Word of the Day.
Word of the Day is corporation.
Well, everybody's heard of a corporation before, but I really thought it would serve some purpose to describe to you exactly what a corporation is, because it's kind of used in a loosey-goosey type manner sometimes. So what does the word corporation mean? A corporation is a separate legal entity. Let me emphasize that. A corporation is a separate legal entity, which is considered separate from its owners. I have been told that it's very much like giving birth to a child. And it's true. It becomes something that you need to take care of. Besides the limited liability which entitles and affords their shareholders, there are also other benefits that a corporation presents to its beneficial shareholders, such as reduced taxes. One thing you should always consider before incorporating is that there are additional requirements to operate a corporation, like annual meetings, annual reporting requirements, and tax returns. You should always seek the advice of both your accountant and lawyer before incorporating a company to make sure you understand what your obligations may be. So corporations are great entities to use when you're buying a piece of real estate, for instance. It doesn't necessarily alleviate you from your personal guarantees or your personal obligation to pay the debt, because most banks will look at a property that they're considering financing. And most of these corporations, in the majority of cases, are newly formed corporations. So they have no credit history. So the bank is going to say, yeah, sure. Okay, put it in the corporation's name. And by doing that, the benefits that come along with incorporating yours, like reduced taxes and reduced liability, are true. But if you're going to finance that property, chances are the financial institution is going to want you to guarantee the monies. So it's a great benefit for some. And as your portfolio grows and your corporation creates and develops its own credit history, there'll come a time when you'll be able to buy a property solely in the corporation's name. I hope that's been of some interest to you listeners. So let's wrap it up. Thank you again, Terrell, for being a guest today. I'm sure there'll be all sorts of questions for you. What's the best way for someone to get a hold of you?
You're quite welcome, Fred. It was my pleasure to do so. My email address is admin, A-D-M-I-N, at allsecure.com, A-L-L-S-E-C-U-R-E.com.
Wonderful. And our next podcast. Listeners, please join us next podcast when we'll be discussing adding a second or even a third ADU. And all our listeners know ADU means auxiliary dwelling unit, the right way, with special guest Nick Karangis from Ottawa General Contractors. Should be a really great show.
You know, Fred, I know a bit about the alarm access control system and the HVAC controls, and I've learned some more again. So, Terrell, thank you. It makes sense that AI would be getting in there and helping you identify and see the freckles of your issue at hand, whether it's the squirrel or the person that shouldn't be there.
You're welcome, Bernie. Thank you.
Yeah, good point. Anything you care to add, Bernie?
Well, Fred, if anybody has any questions, they can send their emails to info@gentryres.com. That's info@gentryres.com.
Again, thank you, listeners, for tuning in. And remember,
if there are no problems,
there are no opportunities. Till next time.
Thanks for listening to Fred and Bernie on another edition of The Property Wizard, brought to you by Creative Insight, helping you connect, and Gentry Learning, real estate professionals and educators. Got a question? Ready to invest? Email info@gentryres.com. And if you'd like to find out more about the courses offered through Gentry Learning, visit gentrylearning.com. Remember to like and leave us a comment and subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode of The Property Wizard.